from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattada! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine. Ben, there is college basketball being played as we speak. The wait is over. It has been a long time coming since that shutdown. Syracuse basketball winning one of the last college basketball games before the shutdown. They beat UNC in the first round of the ACC tournament. And, you know, they were the last ACC basketball team to win a basketball game. So de facto ACC champions, without a doubt. They would have won the national championship after stealing the auto bid from the ACC tournament. And there's no statistics telling us otherwise. But, Ben, we are back with college basketball right now. Syracuse basketball just a few games out. And it's been a long time coming, and definitely an exciting moment after sitting through this treacherous Syracuse football season.
It's been 7 months, 8 months, whatever it is, but it feels like it's been years since we've seen Syracuse basketball. That UNC-SU game coming on the night that Rudy Gobert had tested positive for coronavirus, which for a sports fan at least is kind of the day that everything went down. And it's really exciting. I mean, you said just generally college basketball coming back, it's a lot of fun. We're the first TV timeout here of Abilene Christian and East Tennessee State. And I care for some reason that Abilene Christian is leading 8-6. So it'll be a lot of fun. You know, the football season, while it was great to get sports back later in the year, we were like, sports came back for this. But now we get a team that has a better chance to be competitive in SU basketball starting their season 2 days from now on Friday.
Countdown is going on the Ostrom Avenue Podcast Twitter. Follow us over there at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've had the countdown going. We put it on pause a little bit when the questions were up in the air after Coach Boeheim tested positive for COVID-19 just a few weeks or a few days back. And now we're back. The countdown is in full swing. We've got 2 days left. There's one more countdown graphic, and we are talking Syracuse basketball, getting back into the flow of things. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Any preseason questions you've got, any pressing Bryant questions you've got, we'll give you our thoughts. We'll do the research for you. Follow us over there. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod, and we can get those conversations flowing and get those conversations flowing throughout that Bryant game. I'll be in the Carrier Dome on Friday. One of, you know, just a handful of media that are in there, and, you know, no fans in this season in the Carrier Dome this year. So we'll be giving you those inside looks and those pretty much the first looks that we're going to be seeing at a lot of these Syracuse guys, including Kadari Richmond, including Alan Griffin, as there was, you know, limited access to seeing them in practice this year and seeing what they can actually do outside of the, you know, you're piecing together. Coach Boeheim said this, Marek Dolezal said this in an interview, Buddy Boeheim said this in an interview. You're finally going to be able to put into, you know, realistic visual terms what these guys can do and how they're going to jump into the system. And it's going to be really fun, and it's going to be a fun one against Bryant. And, you know, there's a lot of question marks always when you're going into, you know, a non-Power 5, non-conference game to start the season. Obviously, you assume Syracuse comes in with some pizzazz, but when you've had this sort of weird last 2 weeks leading up to the season opener, it's definitely going to be a little bit different than ever before.
For sure. And this is an opponent that I think many expect Syracuse to not have issues with. But when you start practice the day before a game, you never really know what's going to happen. So the Orange can't come out and act like they're some big favorite. They haven't played basketball together in quite some time, as you mentioned. And this is a Bryant team that, while they had their first game canceled today, I believe, they've had definitely more continuity than Syracuse has had over the last week or so, and ability to prepare for the Orange in a way that the Orange haven't been able to prepare for them. So it's going to be interesting to see this game. You know, I think we'd all be shocked if Syracuse did anything but win comfortably, but it's not completely out of the realm of reality that Bryant, at least early, keeps this game close.
Yeah, it's just going to be sort of, I would assume, the story of the season. And in a typical year, or, you know, a typical idea, you would think that if you're out for 10 to 14 days because of a positive test or because of any reason, you would not get back into the swing of things on a Thursday once you're cleared to practice, have a Thursday practice, and then play a Friday game for your first time playing in over a week together. That's not what you would normally do, but it's just going to be what this season is, in playing any game possible, even if it means some different and difficult circumstances. It could mean that you're going to have teams, and you will have teams, playing games without star players and big players, because this is a season that's about playing as many games as you can safely, and not necessarily about postponing games so that you can get an individual player back or an individual positive test back. And that's exactly what you see. Syracuse, per Mike Waters, back tests or practicing tomorrow morning on Thursday once they get that clearance. And then the Bryant game at 3 o'clock on Friday. Going to be a lot of fun. This is a Bryant team that didn't have the greatest year last year and did not have, you know, a beautiful non-conference conference record, just going 7-11 in conference play. But this is a team that played a pretty strong Rutgers team very close early on in the year, and they bring back a good amount of talent from last season, although they do lose two very key players.
Yeah, and the guys they lose, of course, Adam Grant is the big one. He was their leading scorer last year at 16 points per game. Behind that, the next best is Michael Green, their point guard, who does return, but he only scored 9 points per game. There are a lot of question marks. This is the team that's only returning 33.6% of its scoring from last year, but what they are returning is a lot of rebounding, and that's something Bryant did really well. They grabbed over 40 rebounds per game last season, which was best in their conference. And they got a guy like Patrick Harding, who got 9 boards in 19 minutes per game. They kind of platoon him with Hall Alesius, who got 5 boards in about 20 minutes per game. You add those two together, that's a 15 rebound big right there. So it's going to be a little bit of a handful, I think, for Syracuse to control the glass. They got to do a good job boxing out. That's my big matchup to watch, is how Dolezal and Sidibe handle guys like Harding and Alesius, because they have the ability to really dominate the boards here, and that could help an underdog get a game back close.
Yeah, last season it feels like every game you were talking about the big man matchup. Who's going to match up with Dolezal and Sidibe down low on the opposition? And we've heard they've both put on some weight. They've both put on some muscle. They've both improved. But once again, we haven't really seen it. So it's going to be interesting to see those jumps that they've made and the improvements that Jim Boeheim has said they made and that players have said they made. So you're not really, really sure until you see them on the court. And this is, you know, very solid duo for Bryant to come out, and interesting to see if they'll run that sort of split 50-50 tandem again, or as they lose a power forward coming into this season, they lose Juan Cardenas or Cardenas. To see how they work, and maybe they split to a 4-5 combo and they're both going to get some more minutes, or they'll continue to split. Not exactly sure where that'll be yet, but they crash the boards. And another guy that crashes the boards, I've got to give my local shout outs, the fellow Liverpool high school grad, Charles Pride, one of the best rebounding guards that I've ever seen play basketball, really gets after the boards, has a knack for crashing and finding these rebounds and creating extra possessions, put back boards, getting out in transition. Going to be a really fun matchup for him to be able to come back and play in the dome after, you know, being a Central New York guy, and a really fun little situation for him to come back. And there's some more local talent on this squad as well. You got Lucas Sutherland, who West Genesee guy, not exactly sure if he'll have too big a role on this team, but still definitely fun to bring those local connections back, and such a fun experience for them to grow up watching Syracuse basketball and to be able to open their season together as two local guys coming back to Central New York to play in the Carrier Dome.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. Obviously, it would be best if we could have people there for them to have that homecoming, if there were fans in the stands or even their family. I'm not sure exactly what the rules are there, but I think they'll have a bit of an empty homecoming, but still very cool. You know, I want to go back quickly to Sidibe, who you mentioned. He's a big key, and whether he and Dolezal put on weight and really got stronger will be tested in this game, not only because those guys are good rebounders, but they're measurably shorter than Dolezal and Sidibe. Their biggest big that played any minutes last year is 6'8". They have two guys above 6'8", but they each played in less than 10 games. So we're not really sure if they'll come out on the court. For Sidibe, he really finished last year strong. From the beginning of the season to February 19th, he had three 10-rebound games. From February 22nd to March 11th, he had 10 or more rebounds in every game, six straight. So that's what Syracuse needs. They don't need Barama Sidibe to have a big offensive output. At this point, you know, you take the points from him where you can as bonus. But he needs to be able to control the glass. He did a really good job at the end of last year. Now he's got to prove that that wasn't a flash in the pan and that he can keep going this season and help Syracuse just have an average rebounding season. I mean, we'll hear it later in the episode from our special guest. The Orange, you know, they're not going to dominate rebounding any season. They just have to be average, and that'll help them a lot.
And I'll say this, I am so high up on Barama Sidibe this season. I think it's his time. I think we've seen him playing hurt. He hasn't really been 100%, and you started to see what he's capable of to finish out last season. I think, and this is what we had a guest host a few weeks back in Max Chadwick. I was hosting a show with him the other day, and we were talking about the sort of balance that you need out of Barama. It's got to be increased aggression on offense and a little bit decreased aggression on defense unless you're going for boards. I think it's okay if he picks up a foul going for a rebound. That I'm fine with, as long as he's aggressive, crashing the boards and trying to clean up those scraps. I can't have him, you know, with these hacks and getting off his feet and those poor shot defense with fouls. If he's going to pick one up occasionally with an over the back, it happens from time to time, but as long as he's being aggressive on those boards, I'm going to be fine with the way he plays, because his biggest kryptonite last year was the foul trouble. And once you saw him start to get into a little bit more of a comfortable role and not pick up those fouls and start to figure things out, he really found his stride. I remember last week when we were talking with Mike Waters, he was talking about the numbers that Barama put up in a six-game stretch to close out last season was something that we didn't even see out of Rakeem Christmas his senior season, which is what every Syracuse fan, everyone who covers Syracuse in the media, sort of references back to when they talk about the last time Syracuse had a solid big. Barama was doing things that Rakeem Christmas was not doing his senior year in that all-coveted run that he had and putting up big numbers. He was not rebounding with the levels that Barama did to close out last season. So I think he's shown that this could be his time. If he can play smart and stay out of foul trouble, he's got the capabilities. And now that he's fully healthy, in theory, the health to be able to run and be a really solid option for Syracuse in terms of cleaning up those boards, and something that I am extremely, extremely looking forward to him doing throughout this 2020-2021 season.
Wow, we're giving some Barama love. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast for about a year, last season was not. I think you were his defender.
I was the defender last season. You and Brendan.
Well, I still think Guerrier should play more, but we'll see what happens. But
he will. He'll play at the four.
This was a podcast that was not very high on Barama Sidibe for much of the season. Granted, when he started playing better, I think we responded, you know.
Against my will, we had a podcast come out, and I don't know if it was the title or the gist, but it was the Bench Barama Sidibe podcast, and I tried to defend him, and it took some time.
I don't think it was the title, but it was the main topic.
It was the main gist. I think we strayed away from that on the title. This is Barama's time. I've been on his side longer than most people, and I think it's going to show that Owen, as always, was right in this situation, and Barama is going to make his big jump And I will say, I think Gary is going to be the breakout player of the year for Syracuse. I think Barama is also going to make that big jump and be a really, really solid option for Syracuse.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, a lot of people talk about Griffin, the transfer, as the guy who can really propel the team. But, you know, Barama Sidibe playing at a 8-9 points and 8-9 rebounds stat line can elevate this team almost as much, I think, as Griffin can, because he's, you know, at times he's been such a weakness just in the fact that he can't be on the floor because of his foul trouble, you know, and also his rebounding has had hills and valleys. If he can rebound adequately, score a little bit, he can really bring this team up to a level it hasn't been before and help them win some games that maybe they wouldn't have last year because they were getting dominated by bigs on Clemson and other teams.
We were able to not necessarily look specifically at Bryant, but we continued our basketball preview chat with the Daily Orange reporter, Anthony DeBundo. He is one of the best guys in terms of he finds these stats and looks at the analytics, and definitely a unique perspective to some of the stuff that we look into in terms of Ben and I, and not to diss Mike Waters by any means, but it's just a different perspective as to what Mike provided last week. Anthony DeBundo giving a little bit more into the numbers and the advanced analytics and some really cool instances as to how Syracuse can improve this season and some of the big stats to look at that will be the determiners of their success this season. We now welcome on Anthony DeBundo. He's a Daily Orange sports writer. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on today.
It's good to be here.
First time we have had this WAER Sports, Daily Orange Sports collab. So a very big moment in terms of bridging the gap in our Media Cup rivalry and coming on, having some fun, talking some Syracuse basketball. So it should be a nice little change of pace to have some camaraderie between the two groups and be able to get off of the horrid football season for a little bit.
Yeah, I have nothing but respect for WAER 364 days of the year.
Exactly. So same goes for us.
I haven't competed in a Media Cup yet. I'll just say, like, the lefty from Canada, I'm a big wild card. I think I could make an impact. I'm kind of like Guerrier. I just bowl towards the net, you know. There could be a big impact this season.
Oh my gosh, Anthony. Well, we wanted to just start with talking about the COVID implications. You had an article the other day talking about this. Syracuse with two positive cases already, including Jim Boeheim. How, you know, big an impact is COVID going to play on this season outside of just the fact that it's something that they have to deal with?
I think it kind of works on two fronts. So in one sense, the college landscape as a whole is going to have a lot of problems early in the season with the number of positives that we're seeing, with every program having to shut down and all the issues. The teams are so much smaller that, you know, if you lose two or three players, you're all of a sudden kind of cooked. Like, you really can't make it work with a few players, whereas football, you can kind of compensate for that. But in the long term, having fewer players is almost an advantage. One epidemiologist I talked to said basically, you know, you have a smaller bubble of people that are confined. One, and two, you know, once a certain amount of people have it in your team, you almost do kind of get a herd immunity, in the sense that the majority, overwhelming majority of the players will be okay and they'll have their quarantine. And then they will be almost immune for the rest of the season. Now, it's not the most ideal scenario, but it probably is the most realistic one given what we're seeing. Now, Syracuse football managed the whole year without any positives. Basketball already had a few before the season even started. And a lot of that has to do with kind of the rising case numbers across the country. But I think that overall, I think it's going to be a really, 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 really rocky start with all of the cancellations. But I think by December or January, I think it's going to be better than some people are anticipating.
When you spoke to the epidemiologist, was there anything mentioning increased travel in basketball? Of course, they just play more games and they're bouncing around the country a whole lot more than the football team did in their 11-week season.
Yeah, the one big thing is the quarantine period, right? You only play one football game a week. You know, you have a bunch of positives. It's probably only going to cost you one game in terms of cancellations and reschedules. But The bigger problem then is that if you have it in basketball, you could be talking two or three games in a 10-day period. So that's kind of the bigger issue here, is that they could have a serious backlog of games. I wouldn't be shocked if March Madness got pushed back, if they kind of just add on to the end of the season. I know Rick Pitino has been talking about that on Twitter, saying we need to just move the season back to May Madness. That's possible. The increased travel is a risk, but in the end, you know, they're still kind of traveling in a pod of players. So you could reasonably say that no matter where they are at this point, because of COVID spread, there's risk. So I don't know that the travel necessarily matters, but the cancellations will definitely pile up if there's an outbreak.
If you found yourself atop the NCAA and, you know, the NCAA ended up working like this, where one person gets to make the decision, is this how you would have started the season, or is there a different way you would have approached going about starting up this 2020-2021 season?
It's really hard to say. I kind of, you know, respect the idea of giving it a shot. I don't know that 2 or 3 weeks or, you know, waiting until January is going to change much, because I don't think COVID's going to get better in the next month, especially with the holidays and whatnot. So that's kind of a thing, right? Like you say, okay, well, we could wait a month, but are we just waiting for nothing? We might as well get started, which is kind of where I'm at. You know, if you're going to have the season and the players are taking on this risk, you might as well get it going, knowing that you're going to need more time because of likely cancellations. Like, you know, the Syracuse schedule now is almost certainly not going to be the one that they end up playing this year, because there's going to be cancellations and whatnot and games shifted and moved.
So Jim Boeheim, it was reported yesterday, he and the players have completed their quarantine protocols. Did they return to practice today? Have you heard anything about a resumption of team activities? We're speaking on Tuesday ahead of the game against Bryant on Friday, the season opener.
Yeah, we have not heard anything as of Tuesday at noon when we're recording this about them returning to practice. We've been trying to get in contact with some SU athletic officials about when that may happen. You'd think they'd want to get at least one practice or two in before the first game. So, you know, maybe a tomorrow or even a Thanksgiving practice is in the works, but we have not heard anything yet about them getting back to practice.
Yeah, it seems like they're just going to sort of do what they can. And the Bryant game has been confirmed as of now, and it's going to be played whether they get two practices in, three practices in, four practices, whatever they're going to try and do. It seems like they're dead set on that game, as many assumed at this point. Based on, you know, what they said yesterday. So to kind of get into this season, you had a fun little, you know, statistical breakdown, which is the Anthony DeBundo special, is to combine, as you said, you love to merge, you know, your KenPom stats, any advanced analytics you can, with an Excel spreadsheet, and that's right up your alley. So what are the big numbers to kind of look into with regards to Syracuse's success this season?
Yeah, so that article in the Daily Orange, that was part one of two that I'm doing about kind of, you know, just a breakdown of numbers. We did it for basketball, for football as well. Just kind of looking at a few things that I think kind of are important to how this offense and this defense will play. Part two will be out probably by the time this podcast is out. It'll be out on Wednesday. So I think the one number, there's two numbers really for me that kind of define the season. And one is tempo. Syracuse has been a snail for years. They were one of the slower teams. They were ranking the bottom 100 in pace out of 350 teams. Last year was the first year in a long time that they played fast. I mean, they were relatively fast, you know, above average in pace. And I think that's kind of interesting given the limitations that they do have on defense. Jim mentioned preseason last year, they were going to play faster, and they did. They got out in transition a lot more. And I think it really suits this group of guys who have a pretty good number of shooters and can really space the floor better than those, you know, 2016, 17, 18 teams that really didn't have the shooting and were just long, athletic, defensive-minded teams. So I think that the pace is one that you have to watch, and, you know, kind of how fast do they play. I think there's a potential to play even faster this year, given that they are, you know, bringing almost that whole roster back, and Griffin is able to get out and transition too. And then the second one is assists per field goal made. You know, Syracuse is at its best when they have a point guard who's efficient and can, you know, have a good assist turnover ratio. Frank Howard was not that as good as he was defensively. Now with Gerard, I mean, he was really good last year on offense. Now there's the defensive liabilities with him and Buddy at the top of the zone. They were way too open, but offensively, they moved the ball better last year than they have pretty much every year in the last decade. And it's a strong correlate to how good their offense ends up being. like 0.6 is the R squared, not to get too complicated, but that's pretty strong correlation between how many assists per field goal made they have and what's their overall offensive efficiency. So Gerard is kind of the linchpin for the offense going there in terms of passing.
When they push the tempo so much, do they sacrifice anything on the back end by going so fast on the front end? Because the zone in nature kind of slows down a basketball game.
That is a good point in terms of stylistically. If you're going to play a little bit faster, how does that impact kind of your defense's ability to also get set and get ready? But their main issue on defense wasn't necessarily that they were getting beat in transition, because opponents were still taking a good amount of time to get their shots. Like, their average possession length of the opponents was like pretty normal relative to years past. It was just the quality of shots were way too good. Gerard and Boeheim are not Frank Howard and Tyus Battle at the top of the zone. Elijah Hughes was okay as a defender. And Sidibe was not as good of a rim protector as Chukwu was. So you combine all those factors and you get a pretty mediocre defense. The question is, how do they get better? And I think the one X factor there is Kadari Richmond. He is a lanky guy. He's got athleticism. He's a better defender, it appears. You know, obviously we don't know, than Gerard and Boeheim would be at the top of the zone. So the one interesting thing for me is, does Syracuse go small and put Gerard and Richmond on the court at the same time, two kind of point guards with different kind of games at the top of the zone to try to improve the defense? Does that slide Buddy down to the three, maybe Griffin at the four? That's a lineup I could see them playing a little bit early on to try to improve the defense. And then the other one is Quincy Guerriere. I mean, he's a good rebounder. He's a bigger guy too. He's got size. So he could be, better to help out Sidibe underneath when Boeheim isn't in the game. So I think there's a lot of mixing and matching they could do with that lineup to try to play better defense.
You talked a little bit about Alan Griffin, and you know he comes in and your eyes are immediately drawn to that stat line with the 9 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, and 42% from three in 18 minutes. And you know, the easy thing to do is just to double all those stats as he is in theory playing 30 to 40 minutes a game, but that's not necessarily the reality. Where do you sort of see his stats going with the increased workload?
I think Alan Griffin has the potential to be one of the better players in the ACC, like first or second team. I really am that high on him. And a lot of that will come down to development. But if you look at last year's Illinois team, he was in limited minutes. And I don't know why the minutes were limited. I tried to get Brad Underwood on that and kind of was denied and whatnot. So why was he not playing as much? I don't know. But what I do know from watching a lot of Illinois basketball, because they are one of my teams that I love to watch, he was kind of the motor, the engine guy in that offense and that defense. He gets a lot of steals per minute. He gets a lot of rebounds. He does everything for that offense, and he's a pretty good shooter. Now the question is, and this was kind of where we were with Elijah Hughes, great shooter. Can he be the guy on the ball and get his own shot off the dribble? That's kind of the one thing I'm hesitant on. You know, we saw that Hughes and some scouts I talked to were really high on Hughes being able to do that. They're less sure on Griffin. So if Griffin becomes that, he's even close to that, then, you know, the offense, you know, should be a top 20, 25 offense, really. If he's not, then they kind of have to get more into offense, more sets, more, something else to get open looks. So I think it really comes down to his development as an on the ball player and kind of getting his own shot, similar to Hughes in a lot of ways.
Do you take any confidence, you know, there's a lot of Hughes-Griffin comparisons in the fact that Griffin came from a strong Big Ten program? You know, Hughes came up from East Carolina. It was a little less unknown, whereas we've seen Griffin thrive against strong competition.
Yeah, Hughes also had a couple of years in Syracuse to kind of develop a little bit, or at least that 1 year, and then he had the year off. So there is that. There was steady progression. We've kind of seen from Griffin that, you know, he can be that guy. It's an easy comparison to make, right? Like, we sit here and we say, okay, Hughes did the same thing and now Griffin's going to do that too. That's high expectations, but I think he has the chance to meet them and he's going to play a lot of minutes. So, you know, we'll see. You know, Bam's not going to play more than seven guys, it looks like, between Guerriere, Richmond, Dolezal, Sidibe. Sidibe may come out with foul trouble like always, but and then Griffin, Boeheim and Girard. So they're not going to play more than seven guys. So he's going to get a lot of minutes and a lot of chances to prove himself.
You don't think they'll go eight? You don't think any of the other bigs can get a shot?
I think kind of required if Sidibe gets into a lot of foul trouble. The one really encouraging thing, and Boeheim kind of mentioned this, and I was going to ask about it, and then he kind of said it for me, so I didn't have to ask about it. But Sidibe did improve pretty significantly second half of last year, both in efficiency and kind of getting himself not always in foul trouble. And so that's kind of the big thing. Can they keep him from getting fouls? If he's always in foul trouble, then yeah, we probably will see. I think Jesse Edwards is the first guy. But what we saw from him last year was pretty, you know, I think that, you know, he didn't look quite ready. So I think that's kind of a last case scenario. You don't want a situation where you have to rely on big minutes from Jesse Edwards at the center position.
Do you think more likely Dolezal could slide up there in a smaller lineup maybe than they go to Edwards?
I think it's possible. I worry about the rebounding, but that's where Griffin comes in, right? If Griffin and Guerriere are better rebounders, as good a rebounders this year as they were last year, and Guerriere kind of increases his minutes a little bit, they could probably make up for it. One thing I wrote in that article in the Daily Orange is that, you know, they're never going to be a good rebounding team defensively because of the zone. They've never ranked outside of like the top two or inside the top 250 in rebounding. So it's never going to be a strength. But you need to have it in a situation where it's not an absolutely glaring weakness, where you're, you know, 350th, which I think one year they were down there at like the worst defensive rebounding team in the country. So there's kind of, you know, can you make up for it with Griffin and Guerriere for Dolezal underneath? I think you can in the rebounding department. I worry about defense. Dolezal apparently put on a bunch of weight. Like he's kind of the player I'm most uncertain about. Like he could take that next step. He was definitely better last year than he was 2 years ago, but I wonder kind of what Marek Dolezal we're going to see. That's kind of my kind of X factor in a way.
When you look at this team in sort of a macro look, KenPom's got them at 31 as we speak right now. Is that too high or too low, or where do you kind of see them right now?
I don't think they're a top 25 team. We made the mistake going into 2 years ago. So they had a really good Sweet 16 run. 2017-18 with Battle, Brissett, and Howard, and they were all coming back, right? And we said, oh, everybody's back. So that means they're going to be really good, right? They started the year 16th in the top 25, and there just really wasn't any improvement from any of their players. I'd argue Brissett got worse. Howard was fine. Like Tyus was Tyus. And then like they just didn't really get better. They were just the same team. Slightly better because everybody was back and other teams got worse. So they made the tournament, but they were like a 9 seed and got bounced in the first round. I think we should be very careful of making a judgment that like, just because everybody's back except for Hughes, they're just going to be good again. And they're going to be a top 25, 30 team. I don't think 30 is necessarily right. I'd probably put them closer to like 40. But I think that they're definitely a tournament team. And I think the ACC as a whole this year isn't quite as strong as it's been in years past. So that could open the door for a few wins. I've actually got them winning 12 ACC games. So not bad, but definitely not a top 25 team. There's just not enough defensive talent there for me.
Where do you see them fitting into the ACC picture? The preseason media poll has them at 6, which is the first team. The first five all got first place votes, so they're kind of the first team that people are not considering with a chance to win the ACC. I don't think any three of us are considering they have a chance to win the ACC, but how do you think they fit into the conference?
Yeah, I think there is definitely that clear top five, right? And it's kind of been that way for the last few years. North Carolina had the down year last year. Virginia wasn't quite as good, but when you look at like a Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida State, I think those are the top four. I'm a little skeptical on Louisville, but I think they're definitely better than Syracuse. I'm actually higher on Virginia Tech than most. So I've actually got Syracuse 7th behind Virginia Tech. And then I think there's a drop-off, and that's where I think that it's kind of the mid-to-bottom tier of the ACC doesn't quite look as strong to me. You know, the NC State looks like they're having a down year. I'm not sold on Notre Dame at all. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. BC and Wake are terrible. You know, you look at some of the bottom feeders in the league, they're not quite as good as usual. I think Syracuse has the chance to be a higher variance team where they have more firepower to pull off an upset or two than they did last year. It felt like every game last year was just, is Syracuse better than this team? Yes. Okay. They won. Are they worse? No. Okay. They lost. And like, I think there's more of a chance than this year of them being a higher variance and kind of winning these games they shouldn't, and maybe losing a game or two they shouldn't either. But I think, 12 wins is where I ended up. We'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing the first game. The first big game in the ACC for them is North Carolina, or excuse me. North Carolina. So they do have an easy start to the kind of the run in, to try to bank some wins before, it gets much tougher.
All right. We're going to go rapid fire here. Put you in the hot seat. You got one sentence to rattle off, a slew of miscellaneous questions here. So we'll get going with who leads the team in scoring?
Alan Griffin, 16 points a game, but they're more balanced.
Who's the leading three-point shooter, Boeheim or Griffin, and percentage-wise, not makes?
I'm going to go Boeheim.
Okay. Record prediction if this season works out and they, in theory, play 27 games in the regular season.
That's hard because we don't know who the non-conference games are, but I'm assuming they're not going to schedule anybody good besides Rutgers. So I will go, 12-8 out, 6-1. So 18-9. That sound right? That's really optimistic. Wow. I'll go 17-10.
Throw another non-con loss.
You were a little non-committal, but will Syracuse make the NCAA tournament?
Yes.
Will they
will not be in the last four in. I think they're going to be similar to a few years ago where they were in. It was no sweat, but they're not, challenging for a top 6-7 seed.
How far do they make it in the tourney?
Oh, man. I think the myth of that Syracuse zone doesn't really work as well in the tournament when you can't play defense. So I'm going to go second round exit.
What's your favorite underrated food spot in Central New York or Syracuse in general?
Underrated food spot in Central New York or Syracuse? Oh, okay. So there's a little sandwich shop in Armory Square called Darwin. It's in the Chase building. And I'll have to give credit to WAER's own Gil Gross for putting me on this spot. I went there for lunch a couple times before the end of the semester. Amazing sandwiches.
I had it for the first time this week, actually. They're outstanding.
Yeah.
Definitely threw me for a curve. I walked in and there was not a bad sandwich on that menu. So definitely a spot to look into. You're a Pennsylvania guy. It's a cheap question, but where's the best cheesecake or cheesesteak in PA?
I have to give homage to another WAER person. We were actually talking about this last week with WAER's Corey Barbarian and Manny Martinez. Actually, they apparently drove 4 hours to Philadelphia from Syracuse just to get cheesesteaks, spent like an hour or two in the city, and then turned around and drove back to Syracuse in the same day. That is incredible to me. And I said, I'm in for the next trip. We maybe even have to make it an overnight one and stay at my house. But my number one spot always and will be Jim's Steaks, 4th and South Street. There's also a location in Springfield, which is in Delaware County, just outside the city. 4th and South, it's the best cheesesteak in the city. My dad and I go there all the time when I'm in town. And when my roommate came and was quarantining for a few weeks, we made sure to make the trip to get cheesesteaks to go. So that's my go-to always.
In a few words, like this entire rapid fire segment, how bad is the Syracuse football team?
I was actually in Louisville Friday night, and I had Louisville beat writers asking me that similar question, right? Like, how did you get this bad? Because 2 years ago, they absolutely murdered Louisville in the Carrier Dome, and they were flying high, and Dino Babers' program was kind of rolling. It starts with recruiting on offense. Their receiving core is absolutely terrible. The O-line is horrible. DeVito got hurt. That ruined this. They were not going to win another game once he got hurt. It's a shame too, because the defense is legitimate. I firmly believe they have a lot of good young talent, but this Babers offensive system looks like a lot of teams have either figured it out or he's not recruiting well enough to sustain it.
All right, we'll stick on the football train. Who's your Super Bowl pick right now? I know you're a big NFL predictions guy.
My preseason pick of Ravens Cowboys in the Super Bowl was really looking good. Dak breaks his ankle, and then the Ravens regress heavily on offense. But right now, I think Saints Chiefs is probably the two best teams, with Pittsburgh third. I'm going to go with the Saints to end their playoff voodoo and get to the Super Bowl in the NFC. And then I can't bet against Mahomes in the AFC, but I'm actually going to take the Saints to win it this year. I think Drew Brees goes out back from the 11 broken ribs to take the Saints to the Super Bowl and go out on a high note.
We talked about it a bit before we hopped on. Who's winning the NFC East here? I know you're an Indy fan, but you're in the thick of the worst division in football in Philly.
I will say there's nothing better. Yesterday, so the Eagles lose on Sunday. Wentz is horrible. I turn on sports talk radio driving to the dentist yesterday, and it's just electric. People calling in, calling for Wentz's job, Peterson's job. It's amazing. They're going to lose probably five of their last six, so they're out. I think the most exciting game for me on Thursday's Thanksgiving slate is not Baltimore-Pittsburgh. I'm actually more excited for Washington and Dallas at 4:30. I think the winner of that game will win the NFC East and get to the playoffs. And, you know, the Cowboys' defense was historically bad at the beginning of the year. They haven't been terrible the last 4 or 5 weeks. And then Dalton's back, and he's not good, but he's not horrible. I think the Cowboys might end up winning it, but we'll see.
You're not an Eagles fan. I'm not sure where your other Philadelphia sports alliances fall, but what is kind of the craziest Philly sports fan story you have, or the craziest thing you've seen from the legendary Philly sports fans?
There's a few. The one I like to tell is, so I was 10 years old when the Colts came to Philly. Now, I am a Phillies and Sixers fan. I grew up a Colts fan because of my cousin who we grew up watching Colts games together every week. So I went to a game. The Eagles were playing in Philly. It was Peyton Manning against Mike Vick, actually, was the Eagles quarterback. And I'm in the parking lot, 10 years old in my Colts jersey. And it's a 4:30 game. So I'm like, oh, there's gonna be a lot of drunk people, you know. And I'm getting cursed out by Eagles fans. And, you know, it's hilarious because, like, you know, they're cursing out a 10-year-old for being a Colts fan. So then 4 years later, the Colts go, they host Philly. And I go to Indy, and the people are so nice there. You know, it's such a difference from the Northeast when you go to the Midwest. Chicago, Green Bay, all those fans are much nicer people. Cleveland even. And then I'm getting cursed out by Eagles fans in Indianapolis for wearing my Colts gear. I'm like, you know, we're the home team here. This is not how that works. And so that's a story I always like to tell. There are others, but, you know, my dad owns a sports bar in South Philly. So I get all the craziness from there, and, you know, stories of they used to tip over the porta potties when the fans from the other teams would go in them back in like the 80s and the 90s. It's crazy stuff, but it is fun.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up, rein it back in with one more Cuse basketball question. Give us your hot take of the 2020-2021 season right now.
Kadari Richmond plays more minutes per game than anybody else on the bench. That's not even that really that hot of a take, but Kadari Richmond breakout. I need to get hotter on this take. Okay, Kadari Richmond breakout season. He makes one of the All-American freshman teams.
Love it. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate having you on. Anyone looking for NFL picks, Anthony DeBundo, he's cooled down a little bit, but he has been hot. He has been hot in this season for NFL picks. So find him on Twitter at Anthony DeBundo. Give him a look. He has been cold, but when you're cold, you can only go up from there, and he will heat back up. Don't worry about that. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate it, guys.
One more thank you to Anthony DeBundo for coming on. Love hearing his stats and analytics, and as always with him, a little bit of football talk to keep things rolling. Big NFL guy, a lot of fun to look into some of those quick hits on, you know, Super Bowl stuff and miscellaneous hits in the NFL. Always good to chat that with him. But Ben, it's Syracuse Bryant. We're 2 days away. It is inching closer. You can smell it in the air. Syracuse basketball is back almost. We've got a little bit more time to figure things out, and just a little bit more to discuss leading into this Bryant game. We talked a ton about looking into the big man performances and how Barama Sidibe and Marek Dolezal advance and put on weight and have improved over the offseason. That is one of, I think that is the overall Ostrom pod, what we're looking for in this first game of the season. But there's a couple of other things to look forward to and to look into. What is the thing that you're kind of diving into with the biggest magnifying glass in this season opener?
It's got to be AGO, Alan Griffin. You know, he's been the big storyline. He will be the big storyline for at least the beginning of the season, because, you know, a lot of people, fairly or unfairly, as we talked with Anthony, are comparing him to Elijah Hughes. He comes over as kind of a microwave for Illinois, scored a lot of points and rebounded well in a short number of minutes. Can he translate that now from 18 minutes to 36? That'll be what we got to see. I think I agree with Anthony that maybe, you know, it's not super fair considering Hughes got his redshirt season and then he was a contributor in that year with Tyus Battle, but he wasn't like the guy. And then he became the guy. So he kind of had two full years to turn into what we all remember as Elijah Hughes, and who's joining the Utah Jazz right now. I think Griffin, I don't have sky high expectations in this first game, but if he goes out there and scores 15, 16 points, it would make a lot of people happy. And I think that I'm expecting him to be a part of the offense. It's obviously weird to join a team and not be able to practice nearly as much with them as you would used to, but I'm expecting him to hit a couple threes, rebound pretty well, and provide a lot of energy. You know, he's an energetic guy. He's bouncy off the bench, and he won't be off the bench for this team, I don't expect. So I'm interested to see how he performs on offense and fits into the zone, a system that he hasn't played before in Boeheim's 2-3.
My big thing in this game is there's such a unique season because of the abbreviated non-conference, and then obviously you're playing a really, really talented Rutgers team early on in the season. So you don't have as much time to sort of figure everything out lineup-wise, and there's no exhibition. So my big thing to watch is to see how Jim Boeheim uses this bench. Remember, Anthony said that this is, in theory, a team that is only going to go seven deep. But if there is an opportunity for them to go any deeper, that's going to be determined in this game. And there's a couple of other games in the rumblings that could be played before that Rutgers game. And it's going to be interesting to see, does he use Woody Newton? Does he use Robert Braswell? Does he go any deeper than maybe a little bit with Jesse Edwards at the center position, just to see what these other guys can do? Because you usually have a longer season, and Jim Boeheim gets his flack for it in terms of playing a simple non-conference schedule year in and year out. But who doesn't really play a simple non-conference schedule outside of maybe a preseason tournament here and there? So it's something that you would usually have an opportunity to be able to get these secondary guys, these reserve guys, these 8, 9, 10 guys in terms of play order into the lineup. You're not going to have as much time to do that this season. I'm interested to see who he goes to early outside of Kadari Richmond and Quincy Guerrier to see who could possibly jump in and play some role minutes or get some longer run if there is some foul trouble. Because this is a team, and we've learned in the past that when you do go seven deep, it works as long as people stay out of foul trouble and people stay healthy. But when you run seven, it's very easy to go from, okay, smooth sailing, we're good, you've got those breaks every 4 minutes, it all works out. But when someone gets into foul trouble and you need to sit them down, or God forbid there is an injury, you've now got to go to guys that aren't getting any minutes. So you want to sort of have that 8, 9, 10 option sort of developed, so you at least know what you get. And so those guys aren't getting their first true run of the season in, say, a Rutgers game, if a Barama or a Quincy or a Marek gets into foul trouble early on, and you got to get a little bit of bench minutes to chew some time. So you want them to get a little bit more run early on. And it's something that definitely is going to be looked into by me. I'm sure you will. And I'm sure there are dozens and dozens of other media members and fans just looking to see what options there are on the bench for the Orange.
Yeah, and you talked about the front end. I even think on the back end, obviously the foul trouble is less of a concern with Gerard and Boeheim. We know Kadari Richmond, who sometimes is listed as a forward, but I think we've all been told and kind of agreed that he'll play more of a guard role. He's the only other guard, really, that I see getting minutes on this team. I mean, to go only three deep is a lot to ask when, you know, Syracuse went to double overtime last year. And like, there are times when you're going to need more than three guards. So I don't know if they just go ultra big and find a way to slide one of their forwards back, who's a little more of an outside guy, but it'll be interesting to me to see what happens if Syracuse gets up big and they take Boeheim and Gerard out, who plays in the game.
Yeah, definitely something to look into. Also maybe some different lineup looks in terms of, will they go a little bit bigger at all in this game, or will they stick to that lineup that we have presumed with Boeheim, Gerard, Alan Griffin, Marek Dolezal, Barama Sidibe, and Kadari Richmond coming in to sub in for the one and the two at different points in the game. Will they ever go bigger and push Alan Griffin, who's shown that he can handle the ball and can shoot the ball and can get to the rim? Maybe you try him at the two at certain times to see if there is a bigger option that you are competent and able to run with if need be in certain personnel matchups or a certain game and opponent matchups. Definitely something to look forward to. We've got a lot more content coming for you on Twitter. Ben and I, we used to do our predictions for football on the podcast. It was easy when you've got one game a week, when you're going to be doing these multiple game per week situations. We're going to switch that over to Twitter. We've got a little bit more of a game and some running stats that we're going to work with in terms of seeing who the best predictor of this group is, and definitely working to continue that. We got one more day of the countdown on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Give us a follow over there and interact with the tweets. Please reply to us, ask us questions, give us flack for any takes that we are definitely regretting ourselves, but it would be better if we have to regret them publicly as well. So give us the crap if you need to. Reply to us, ask us questions, get anything you need to do at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. And while you're following, give us a subscription. Anywhere you get your podcast, subscribe to us, leave us a 5-star rating, leave us a reply and a comment. Give us some feedback on what we're doing. We'd love to hear your voices and continue to interact with you guys on a day-to-day basis. A lot of fun on Twitter. Ben, myself, always looking to give you our thoughts whenever we can. It's been a lot of fun, and it's finally here. We've done our speculating on Syracuse basketball, and Ben, it is finally time. Syracuse basketball, we still got a few hours until it's 48 hours away. We are 2 days away from Syracuse basketball. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.